me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. I never put that basketball underneath my pillow. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. I need help, ladies and gentlemen. I need someone to stand beside me. I need someone to set a pick for me in the free throw line of life. Someone I can pass to. Someone to hit the open man on to give him goal. And not end up in the popcorn machine. So cheerleaders, help me out.
I got a basketball, Jones. So we come live with you. On many of these same stations, Tony Basilio along with you as we go live tonight on a night where the Volunteers lose in Nashville. Really game effort by Tennessee. All these games against high-level competition have been what you would call terrific, or what I would call really terrific efforts by our basketball Vols. And that's exactly what we saw tonight as Tennessee loses after it's all said and done to the Zags of Gonzaga on a day that could have been special, but as it is, the Vols fall tonight in Nashville by a final count of 86-76, and a game that could have been much closer, absolutely could have been a game that Tennessee, you got to handle the end of these games well, and so far this season, they haven't. But there were a lot of bright spots to draw from today's game, and we'll get into that tonight as we visit with you on your Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime, Tony Basilio reporting for service. What an odd game this was, and I'm going to bring Keith Hatfield in here. Also, Mark Griffin, love to hear from you tonight at 865-200-5402. Again, 865-200-5402. Those of you who joining me tonight on Facebook Live, it's okay with you if I drink me a glass of champagne, yes? Thank you. I've got an old buddy here with me tonight. And we were toasting the old times, and life is fine. Tennessee loses 86-76 in a game where, they had an interesting line scoring-wise, because Mostella, a guy who's been on the side of a milk carton recently, leads the Vols with 17 points, and Quay Parker gives Tennessee some serious juice in the first half, and Rick Barnes rewards him by starting him in the second half. We have a lot to get to. 865-200-5402. Again, 865-200-5402. If you want to get in with us tonight as we go to the Newsmaker Hotline, and I believe this is the great Keith Hatfield standing by with me. Keith, how you doing, brother?
Doing fantastic, Tony. How are you?
Welcome back for another action-packed year of this, and Keith, we knew when Tennessee made this schedule that it was going to be hard to pick one of these teams off. Boy, Tennessee really had chances in every single opportunity, Keith, to steal one of these. They did everything but steal one.
Well, I think Tennessee's played five teams that are better than at least half of the SEC, and they've lost all five of them. And other than the Chattanooga game, where that's the first game for a bunch of freshmen, and I didn't think they played particularly well that night. They've been really good every other night against top-level competition. I mean, you replicate everything but the early run tonight when you get down 21, mainly because you couldn't make a shot and they didn't seem to miss one. I mean, you play the way you've played the last two Sundays, there's maybe three teams in the SEC that could beat you on a given night.
Those of you that want to watch us tonight, you can go to Facebook Live. I'd invite you to do that. Again, Facebook Live if you want to watch us. We're not Periscoping. Join the Tony Basilio Show Facebook page and check us out over on Facebook Live as we discuss this one tonight. Tennessee about to get blown out of the building, and they hold the Zags in front of the three wise men. We're there tonight. Dave Hart, John Gilbert, and Mr. Tubbs. We're all in attendance. I've got a picture of Mr. Tubbs. It's rather shadowy from the back. It's like a Sasquatch up in Yukima, Washington back in the day. But I believe in Sasquatch. I believe in Mr. Tubbs. And I believe Tennessee really put the clamps on them at the end of the first half. Keith, both teams at times, and I guess you get this in early season basketball, both these teams at times seemed out of rhythm and playing the game too quickly.
Well, Tennessee, when they got down 21, appeared to start trying to make it all up in two possessions. I thought that was one of Tennessee's problems there. I think that's going to be a problem with a young team. And, I mean, let's be honest, this team's best point guard is over there in a walking boot right now. So, the ball handling, I mean, I know I harp on here, I'm sure people are sick of it, about live ball turnovers, but one of the main reasons, beyond the fact Gonzaga couldn't miss early, that Tennessee ends up down 21 is they give away about 10 points on runouts off turnovers. And you just can't do that against anybody of any consequence. And I think Gonzaga's certainly one of the 10 or 15 best teams in the country, undoubtedly.
There's no question about that. And the thing about this Zags team is they can hurt you from the inside, they can hurt you from the outside, but what's weird about them is they don't necessarily rebound all the ball all that well for a team that has some hosses up front. And I like the kid they have with the young male pattern baldness, the big guy up front, Karnowski, who I call the Punisher. He reminds me of the Punisher back in the day.
Well, I mean, Karnowski's he's probably the one physical guy. I mean, the rest of their big guys are more finesse, kind of modern big guys in the kind of European mold. They think they're all jump shooters and everything and want to be Dirk Nowitzki instead of getting down low and really getting after people. But, I mean, Karnowski's a throwback. And you look out there in the second half at one point tonight, we've got Grant Williams guarding him. I mean, that's not going to work. And I do give Barnes credit for something. I mean, if you're just trying to win the game tonight, probably you throw out some kind of junk defense and try to zone them up or do something like that. But I would much rather do what I'm normally going to do the rest of the year in this game and take my chances, because we're not going to play anybody the rest of the year that has anybody like Karnowski. I mean, Moses Kingsley's a pretty good post player. I mean, Kentucky doesn't really have anybody in that mold. And we're not going to see the big kid at Texas A&M, I guess Davis, is the closest we'll see to that the rest of the year. And I thought we handled okay. And I thought in the second half we did okay guarding Karnowski because people got down in there and helped out. And they didn't leave Williams or Evans or whoever was on him on an island. I thought they defended him okay in the second half. It's just that Tennessee's got to get somebody in that 6'8 to 6'10 range with some weight on them to guard the few guys like that there are in college basketball.
Well, and you know what? I was going to say that the young man who hurt himself with the elbow injury would fall into that vein, but he's not because he has to add weight. And your point is, when you play a team like that, man, they really expose you not having a bruiser. And if you'll notice, a couple things happen late. Now, we were talking about Karnowski before. He missed a couple of shots, but they got the ball into him ad nauseum whenever they wanted it, as Tennessee was whittling away at their lead. But all in all, I thought that was a pretty damn good effort from a Tennessee team that was getting ready to get blown out of that game. Early in the second half, coming off that terrible turnover, which is just that Evans turnover is just a terrible way to end the first half. I mean, here's a team that in the Vols that held them scoreless for close to 4 minutes, 2.1 seconds left. They're getting ready to maybe cut that lead down to single digits. And Keith, as sure as I'm sitting there, that is the worst thing that could have happened right there. The worst thing that could have happened.
Well, no, I mean, you essentially throw away any momentum. I mean, you've cut a 21-point deficit to 12. The worst you should do is end up with a desperation shot from around half court there, and you end up giving them a dunk at the buzzer. I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that.
It doesn't. And by the way,
especially when you're throwing the ball in from in front of your bench.
That looked like me back in the day in CYO basketball. And I'm looking at myself, Keith, this is when you come to grips with who you are. I've got a big old pizza stain on my Donate Life shirt that I'm wearing tonight. I've got a big old pizza stain, so I apologize for that for the viewers, but enjoying a little pie tonight to go along with a little bit of wine. Who says you can't let your hair down on the Basilio app and here at TonyBasilio.com? By the way, 865-200-5402 is our number. Smartway, Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime, the Vols falling overtime to Gonzaga, 86-76. Keith and myself have had a robust debate on our next opponent for a while. I think it's okay to go to East Tennessee State and play. Turns out Keith might be right, because now you go up there and you're going to walk into a Hornets nest Thursday. I think the game's Thursday night, right? The game's
Thursday night.
You're going to walk into a Hornets nest with them. They are commissioning their own television broadcast that they're going to syndicate across the state. And this is a really big deal that Tennessee's going to ETSU. You told me when it was first announced, and I believe this was a Donnie Tindall deal. That was their schedule. You said it was stupid then, and now do you think it's stupid, or where are you on it?
I never thought it was a good idea, and I stick by what I've said. I don't think you ever do that, for the same reason that West Virginia never goes to Huntington and plays Marshall, and Kentucky doesn't go to Richmond to play Eastern Kentucky or anybody else. I just don't think you do it. There's nothing in this for Tennessee. Nothing.
Well, I mean, from that standpoint, you're right. However, aren't you, you're exposing yourself to, your fan base up there, which isn't a bad thing, in a major sport, which isn't a bad thing, right? That's
well,
not
yeah,
a bad
okay.
thing.
Okay, good. Schedule a game at Freedom Hall and play Radford.
I see what you're saying.
You can get in front of your Tri-City fan base without having to play ETSU.
Did you like playing this game in Nashville tonight? Because I'll give you a little behind the scenes. Boy, they had to really paper that thing. Wow. I mean, I'm telling you that behind the scenes. Here's what I found out, Keith. The pre-sale on that thing. Well, the sale today, going into today, was around $4,000. Now I'm not sure what they paid to put that up. But ain't nobody making money at those prices. And they gave a lot of tickets away to get people in there, which I don't blame them for doing that. And then they let everybody down to make it look, you know, semi-respectable on television. I would like to see this opponent played in this building. But last year we played them on a neutral floor, didn't we, basically?
Well, we played them in Seattle. I mean, Gonzaga plays a quasi-home game in Seattle every year, and we were it last year. My thought is, and certainly just essentially borrowing from something that happened yesterday in Indianapolis, I don't know why Tennessee, Memphis, and Vanderbilt don't play a doubleheader in Nashville every year. And if you want to use ETSU, Chattanooga, MTSU, and Belmont to rotate the fourth spot, that's fine. And just do what Notre Dame, Purdue, Butler, and Indiana do every year, because Tennessee basketball, even at its hottest, I mean, even when Pearl's team went in there and played Oklahoma State, I don't care what they announced that night, there weren't 8,000 people in the building, and Tennessee basketball was as hot at that point as it's ever going to be. It's just not something you're not going to sell tickets to a regular season Tennessee game at the Bridgestone Arena unless they're playing North Carolina or something of that nature. I mean, Gonzaga's a top 10 team, and you saw how much that got people. Now, granted, Tennessee's expected to be down. You get Tennessee to where they're back at least flirting with the top 25, you might get more interest than you did tonight.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, that Pearl team, the night they beat Oklahoma State on that tip-in by Bradshaw, I mean, they were selling tickets for $5 a shot outside that game.
Here's the other problem. Here's the other problem you had with tonight's game. And by the way, if you were there, we'd love to hear from you at 865-200-5402. The other problem you had, just thinking about that sports marketplace and all the things that were playing against the Vols today. You had the Titans, who are playing excellent football right now.
And the game didn't end until the Tennessee game had already started.
Correct. So if I'm going to go down there, I mean, look, if I'm going to schedule that, let's play that thing at 6 o'clock Eastern time, kind of like we did last week. Let's play a Sunday night game. But we had to fit it in the ESPN's window, and then we are using an arena where last night they had the thing full with hockey fans. I mean, I'm not complaining about it. It just is what it is. And today was what it was. By the way, 865-200-5402, if you'd like to get in with us. Go ahead, Keith.
Well, if I'm going to do it, Tony, what I do is I find a day that the Titans are playing a 1 o'clock Eastern home game, and I schedule my game to start at 5:30 or something. That way you've got a zillion people in downtown Nashville, some of whom will be Tennessee fans. That way you've got a ready-made market. I mean, tonight, it's a road game for the Titans, so people are probably, A, watching on TV at home for the most part. So I play on a night that, I mean, I don't know what the logistics of this would be. I know they do it in Madison Square Garden. I mean, for years, the Grizzlies and UMemphis have played doubleheaders. The college team would play at noon, then the Grizzlies will play at 8 that night. And play the basketball game at noon. Let them pull the floor up and have the Predators play at night on a Saturday or something.
I'm 50.
And there are ways to do it.
And the thing is, I'm 50,000% with you on the deal that that it's a long overdue thought for me that we need some kind of interstate event.
Well, we've got a billion D1 teams in the state, and most of them are playing pretty good basketball.
Yep.
Tennessee, I think.
Yep.
I think it's starting to show that this class is a little better than a lot of people thought. Tennessee appears to at least be certainly on the uptick. Certainly, I'm not going to act like this thing's about to take off like a rocket or anything.
Right.
But it's certainly at least stabilized and trending up. Memphis won't be as flashy as they've been, but Tubby will be just fine there. And Belmont, like I said, I mean, you could rotate through. I mean, granted, Chattanooga, ETSU, MTSU, and Belmont aren't always all going to be great. But if you rotate among the four of them, 5 out of 6 years, the fourth team in that doubleheader is going to be really good. So you just rotate among those four schools. Obviously, Tennessee and Vanderbilt will never play, but Indiana and Purdue never play in the deal they do in Indianapolis every year, and it works just fine. So I think I think it'd be a great thing for basketball in the state. And the one time I remember them really selling a bunch of seats at Bridgestone, I think Memphis played MTSU and Tennessee played Western Kentucky. I was there and they sold a boatload of tickets for that. Cause now granted, Western sent a bunch of people too. That's when they had Courtney Lee and they were really good, but you had a really big crowd there for that. And I think if you put Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and Memphis in the same building on a mid-December Saturday night.
Yep.
And put it this way, if the smaller schools don't want to participate or don't want to rotate among themselves, hey man, just add some marquee third, fourth team every year. Call up, let Barnes do what he does, and Tubby has the same kind of stroke. Call up Indiana and say, hey, you're going to play Tennessee in Nashville on this night. How's that?
The ball
we'll
game,
come back and play you in Indianapolis next year.
Let's go through some of the numbers in tonight's game as Tennessee finds themselves on the downside of an 86-76 loss. Again, Tennessee plays a very good opponent, does enough to win, yet doesn't win, did just enough to lose, which essentially is what went on here. Let's go through some of the scoring. Mostella leads the Vols, 17 points, 6 of 17 from the field, 3 of 10, shot 10 three balls in the game, 2 of 2 from the line, no rebounds, 1 assist, and did that in 27 minutes. Your thought on the night Mostella had?
There might have been one of those 10 that I thought were ill-advised.
I agree.
And he's one of those guys that's his primary role on that team is to score. If he's not going to take good quality shots when he's got them, he's not good enough defensively or as a rebounder or as a passer to be out there. So I've got no problem with him taking all those.
Next on the mic is the freshman Williams. Really had an impact on the game when he got 2 personal fouls in the first half. And it hurt Tennessee's production offensively. Williams not being able to go. Boy, there's something about this kid. He's undersized. He looks out of place at times, but he's not afraid. He's active. He gets to the foul line, and he looks to me like he'd be a really nice player. Coming off his career night the other night in a Tennessee victory, finishes with 11 in the game, 2 of 4 from the field, 1 of 1 from three-point land, gets to the line 10 times, makes 6 of them, 7 boards, and only one turnover in 35 minutes. Worth of work. Easy for me to say. By the way, the Vols in the game turned the ball over only 10 times as a team, only 2 times in the second half.
Oh, I think 8 of the 10 of the total number, probably 6 of the 8 in the first half were in the first 7 or 8 minutes.
Exactly right. And the Zags in the game finished with 20 turnovers. And I will write tomorrow in my blog, Keith, that Tennessee had a whistle that not even Don from Sweetwater can complain about in that game. That was a generous whistle. Do you feel me?
Oh, no. Had the officials let Gonzaga be more physical and just back guys down in the post and not called some of those offensive fouls they called, I mean, it would have been a bloodbath because Tennessee just physically isn't equipped to do anything with him. I mean, Lou Evans is probably the guy most physically equipped to deal with them. And I mean, he's limited to say the least.
And Jeff Peterson, a big fan of mine tonight on Facebook Live, says the following, and then we'll go to the phones. 100% is the highest possible. You cannot be 50,000% for something. As usual, you exaggerate endlessly. And Jeff, you are a humorless drawl. But your favorite host right now is sitting around with his feet up, and you're being forced to listen to this shit.
He's probably watching replays of Malik.
Big now, boy.
His host is watching replays of Malik Monk's three at the end of the game yesterday.
Interesting. Let's go back to our phones. Get as many people in here as humanly possible. Not that I took what you said possible. Not that I took it personally, Jeff. I don't want to over-exaggerate, but you're a bore. I used to love people like you in class. You can't say 1,000%. Hey, let me tell you something, Jeff Peterson. I'll say what I want, when I want, where I want, and to whom I want. Can you feel me? Back to the phones we go. If you want to get in with us, 865-200-5402. As we continue down Tennessee's list of scorers tonight, Hubs the third. And Hubs had 3 on his uniform before it became chic in the NFL to put senior. Ricky Manning senior, so-and-so junior, so-and-so the fourth. I mean, I love that. I mean, I love that stuff. There are things that I like that are coming back in. The senior, junior, the third, the second, the seventh, the eighth. I like that. Seventh Woods from North Carolina. I like him. Let's go back to our phones. We'll get as many people in here because this show is about you and your phone calls, and that's what we do after Tennessee basketball games here on your Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime. And I say to our next caller, hello and welcome in.
Tony, Keith, it's Smitty. How are you?
Hey, Smitty, welcome in, brother. Welcome back home.
Yeah, man, it's all good. Hey, I mean, I really feel bad for Tom Hart. He's just not that good at what he does. He needs to really focus on calling the game and not trying to officiate the game or coach the game. This guy just needs to stick to the basics, get a little over the top. Unfortunately, Kara Lawson has the personality of a 2x4. So tonight was miserable listening to the game, but you got to give the team a lot of credit. I mean, 4 games in a week. 2 against top 10 teams. I don't know how good Gonzaga is. I mean, they didn't look great handling the ball tonight, but I mean, Tennessee took advantage of what they were given. But you could tell how young they were, and some of the mistakes that they made late. If they have a little bit more, experience, I think that they could come back and win that game. it was, honestly, I'm really impressed with what they've done. You know, I'm tired of moral victories, but, you know, you can kind of see when this team matures because we don't really have any one and done. I think if you can fit one or two more guys in this lineup, I think you're looking pretty good in the future. That's the first time I can say that in a while, to be honest.
And it feels good to say that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it does. That's basketball, though.
Yeah.
You can say that in basketball.
Absolutely.
Football, on the other hand, is a little different. But in basketball, you know, you could talk a little more that way, I think.
It's you can turn a ship around. And, I mean, look, I've been on Barnes for his recruiting. But there's no doubt that his coaching, he did a great job with last year's team. And he's done a very good job with this year's team. And there's no denying that. Now, some will say, Tony, at the Division I level, it's about wins and losses, and they're a 500 basketball team, and unless they do some work in conference, they may not make the NIT, and all that's true. I understand that. But at the same time, if you can't look at the level of effort he's getting out of those kids and the high-level basketball they've played, I mean, look at that North Carolina team that went toe-to-toe with Kentucky. Tennessee stood in the ring with them. Now, granted, I mean, Kentucky, I'm not going to pretend that North Carolina had their point guard. They didn't. But neither did Tennessee have Bone. So
right.
That's got to count for something.
Well, I saw Keith the night before the game, North Carolina game. I told him, I said, look, this team's going to cover. They're going to cover the spread.
Yeah.
They're going to cover it easily.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just see it from what they saw. You know, from what we've seen against Oregon, from what we've seen against Wisconsin, two really good teams. I think Oregon's still trying to find their identity a little bit, but they are a really good team.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you got to, I mean, no Fulkerson tonight, no Bone. You go to the wire after a pretty really, actually a really poor start against Gonzaga. I think you did a pretty good job. Now, the officials, on the other hand, need to just stay away from the game. I mean, they really need to just back off. If they want to call these hand checks, that's fine. But, I mean, there's so many calls away from the ball tonight. It was unbelievable. It was terrible.
I thought Tennessee, for the most part, though, had a pretty generous whistle. I mean, I thought the Vols got away with a lot. And I'm like Keith.
I'm not complaining about that. I think yeah. That they got lucky with that tonight. But as far as a fan watching the game, I mean, that was brutal.
Well, one of the points Kara Lawson made, who you made fun of, is that they got to start, well, I think you eviscerated her. I don't think you made fun of her. And you ripped my buddy Tom Hart, too, who's my boy, and he's friend of the program, and you just kind of took off on him, too. But one of the things, Keith, she was talking about, and I don't know if you were in a spot to hear this, but she said she's glad that they're making a concerted effort to call a lot of the moving screen stuff, Keith, that they're presently calling. She thinks that goes on far too much in the sport of college basketball, and it makes an impossible defense. She said,
"Well, if you can't use your hands defensively, if you can't put your hands on somebody and they're allowed to hit you with rolling hip checks, you can't defend."
Yeah, and they called that tonight.
If they're not going to call carries, which they've completely quit calling, if you're going to allow a guy to essentially throw the ball out to the side and take two steps with it extended while they're dribbling, and you're going to let other players, secondary players, bump the guy guarding the ball, there's no way you can play defense.
Did you, Keith, find the officiating tonight? Because there were 56 combined fouls very quietly in that game. And, of course, the Zags had, and I guarantee you Mark Few thinks this, he thinks it was excessive, they finished with four players with four personal fouls in that basketball game. I can guarantee you he thinks it was excessive. They had 30. Tennessee had 26. The Vols finished with Parker with four fouls, Williams with four fouls, and RH3 had three. Keith, did you find the night's officiating to be excessive?
I thought they, especially on some, I'm big on you don't call contact that doesn't distort the game. Two guys bumping into each other 35 feet from the basket when the guy with the ball is not even attempting to go to the basket. To me, he doesn't merit a whistle. But they're apparently under strict orders to clean up everything on the perimeter. So if that's what they're told to do, that's what they're going to do, and you have to adjust to it.
And I can live with that. Anything else for us, Smitty, here on the way out? We'll get some other folks in.
No, not really. I don't want to, but I don't want to throw Rick in the, you know, I don't want to give up on him quite yet. I know his recruiting, I think that he's being held back on recruiting, to be honest. I think that they don't want some things going on, so that's kind of my thought on that. I think that things might change up a little bit. I see that some guys are interested, but that's it. You know, I don't want to give up on them quite yet. So, we'll
thank you, guys. Brother. Thank you. Yeah, it'd be a shame. What about this Bowden kid that we found, Keith? Is that guy a player or what?
Well, like I said, as you and I talked off air one day, I know there are a couple of Conference USA coaches kicking themselves for not listening to someone who told them to. Him.
What did you see in him that you liked?
I mean, he can shoot, he's athletic, and having that combination in college basketball these days is usually lacking. Guys who can shoot aren't terribly athletic, and guys who are terribly athletic generally can't shoot. So, I mean, when you find a guy that has both, that's a pretty valuable commodity. They may not be, oh, well, we want our wings to be 6'6", or
yeah.
This or that. Well, Malik Monk's undersized.
You know, a lot of... Well, that's a great point.
I just don't... Especially at the collegiate level. At the NBA level, I understand a little bit that, okay, we've got a prototype.
Yeah.
At the collegiate level, man, there are plenty of 6'3 wings. I mean, Villanova won a national championship.
Playing that way. That's exactly right. I value scoring. At the collegiate level, if to use Konzo Martin's term, if you can score the basketball, I'm finding a spot for you. Period, end of sentence. I will find a spot for you.
You have to be a complete defensive liability and a complete turnstile.
Yes.
Not to merit being on the floor if you can score.
Yes. 865-200-5402. Tonight, making your way through, and about Bowden tonight, he finishes with 9 in the game. He does foul out of the contest. And by the way, the Zags had 2 guys foul out along with their 4 that finished with 4. I mean, you talk about a team that was ripped apart with foul trouble, Nelson and Collins, but Bowden also went out early, played 27 minutes in the game, finished with 9 points, had a huge putback rebound, a loud follow in the second half, and a kid that looks like he athletically looks like he belongs. Absolutely looks like he belongs at this level.
I don't think there's a guy. I don't think there's a guy in that freshman class, other than the guy who's been about as productive as any, if not more productive, Grant Williams, who might fall a tick below what you look for from a pure athleticism standpoint. I think everybody else is where you would want them to be or ahead of it. I mean, Grant Williams. I'm not sure that. From a running start, he gets up okay, but I mean, from a just get lift off the floor from a dead stop, I mean, I don't know that he can jump over the Maynardville phone book.
Right. And somebody was asking me, did you not watch the player he played at Carter? And the answer is no. I did not watch him when he played at Carter. Apologize for that. 865-200-5402 if you want to get in with us. Tennessee comes within a real whisker. In fact, I made some notes in the game how close the Vols were. Keith, at the 3.5-minute mark, Tennessee had climbed back and it basically gotten to within 4 points. And then
and
they had a...
And Lamonte missed a wide-open 3 that was right on line.
Yep.
I mean, they're right there.
Yep. Tonight's game was interesting. You had Lamonte Turner, and then you had... the take. Was that Turner on the take as well, the ball that slipped out of his hands?
Yeah, I think that was the next possession. I think we missed the 3 up with them up 4. They scored, and then he came down and beat his man, and the ball slipped away from him, and I think it ended up tied up. I think Lou Evans ended up on the floor with them, but it was their possession.
It was a very interesting game. Tennessee, 6-5 on the year, 5-5 officially. I believe is the way that's the game is played with the Chaminade win, which is part of taking part in that tournament. And Tennessee for the night, if you want to point to anything that could have had a deleterious effect on the way the night turns out for the Vols, they were 24 of 33 from the foul line, while their opponent was 27 of 33. I mean, even if you get all those foul shots, you're still not going to win the game, but the game's a lot closer. at the end with a minute
and a
half.
But that's really still not awful.
No, it's not terrible.
I mean, that's why somebody was sitting there tonight.
Yeah.
I was sitting next to him, goes, well, you know, they've missed 9 free throws. I'm like, yeah. They're shooting right at 70%. You can't expect to shoot 90% on every night from the foul line. I mean, this thing has been, for the most part, fantastic from the free throw line for most of the season. But you look, they've been nice. They're 21 of 24. They're 22 of whatever. I mean, this thing's had some nights from the free throw line. And tonight you ended up with some of the guys who aren't the greatest free throw shooters shooting them. I mean, Alexander shoots a couple. Grant Williams is a good but not great free throw shooter. I mean, when you end up with some of your guys who aren't your better shooters shooting them, you're going to miss a few more than normal. But one thing I'm always big on, Tony, is watching teams learn. And something I noticed in the second half, that it's good to see a team actually figure something out. In the first half, one of the main reasons they had problems dealing with Karnowski and Collins and the French guy and all of their offensive rebounders was they weren't gang rebounding in the first half. There's a rebound in the second half. Tennessee, I think, is down 6. It may have been, the possession where they got the ball to cut it to 4.
Yep.
The ball goes up and Karnowski's down there.
Yep.
And he's surrounded by 4 Tennessee guys who are all over him and just jumped over the top of him. I mean, Jordan Bowden jumped over the top of him and tipped the ball to, I think, Grant Williams.
Lamont,
I mean, that's how you deal with that.
And that's how you do it.
You got to go at him 4-1.
Right.
Yeah,
you got to have energy. You got to have energy. Lamonte Turner said, we were ready for their size out of the gate, but we didn't come out of the gate with energy. Tennessee started that game dead to the world. It looked like that game, Keith, had Syracuse in one of Wade Houston's years. I was looking for Andrew Moten to come out of the tunnel. I mean, that thing looked like it was going to be a beating.
At least we hit the rim early in that game. I always remember that game as a game that Tennessee didn't hit the rim with a shot for the first 5 minutes. I always remember about that one.
That might have been the worst Tennessee basketball game that the living fan will ever witness.
There were some bad ones in the Houston era, but that the first ten minutes of that one are all time.
Anytime I think about killings, I always think about that game because it was a flat out stone cold killing. Tennessee, though, as it is, unbelievably scratched back in that game. Keith, I didn't think. 6 minutes to go in the first half, I thought, boy, this team's going to get blown out. I mean, Tom Hart and Carol Lawson were on there having a personal conversation, and I've been in their spot. You get in a game that gets ugly, and you feel like you need to fill the time, and that game looked like it was heading for 30-pointville. I mean, it kind of hung in the balance there, and the Vols had that run at the end of the first half. What did you see from Tennessee that allowed them, Keith, to have that run?
Well, I thought they got a little more aggressive. And I mean, certainly the players out there have a much better feel for it than I would, but I didn't think there was that, the energy was that lacking early as much as it was. And Gonzaga just didn't miss any shots. And Tennessee didn't make any. And you're going to look like you're dead to the world when that's the case. I mean, I'm a big NBA guy. I mean, there's a few nights every year where you're going to turn on your TV and you're going to go, oh, wow, Sacramento's beating the bejesus out of Golden State. Or something like that, because when the other guys can't miss, and you can't, you saw it Thursday night in the first half. When the other guy can't miss and you can't throw it in, you're going to look bad regardless of how well you're doing everything else.
Robert Hubbs said, not meaning to be argumentative, we just played harder. We've just got to play harder and defend the ball. We came out tonight with no energy. I take full responsibility. Two things.
I like that he's taking responsibility.
Have you ever thought you would see that young guy grow up like he has? That's pretty incredible if you ask me.
That's what happens when you get some adult supervision.
If you'd like to get in with us tonight on your Smartway, Garza Law, Tennessee
Maybe I didn't see it, Tony. But I didn't think Gonzaga was that open early when they hit all those threes. I mean, it appeared to me guys were having to double down into the post, and certainly guys might be getting there a step late, but I didn't think it was that guys were just standing out there taking target practice.
It always looks easy, though, when shots are going in. It doesn't matter what the defense looks like. I mean, when you're shooting the ball at that kind of clip, it always looks easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, but No, but I guess my point is, Tony, if I'm looking at that and they're shooting threes and their guy's standing in the middle of the paint, well, yeah, I've got a problem with that.
Yeah.
But it looked like we were closing on all of them. Now, we might have been late to rotate or something, and that's an energy thing, sure.
Yeah.
But it's not as if we had got – they were open by 10 feet when they were shooting them.
The Vols lose tonight, 86-76, down in Nashville, as Tennessee on the evening, led by Dietrich Mostella, who comes out of witness protection to go 6 of 15 from the floor and was very active in the game. And let's get our next call in on your Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime. Hello.
Tony.
Hey, welcome in.
John Tweed, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Tweedy.
Hey, Keith, how you doing, my friend?
Doing just fine, John. How are you tonight?
Yeah, good. Is it okay to be excited and exasperated at the same time?
Absolutely.
That's the nature of being a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, absolutely.
It?
Yeah.
Would you say Rick Barnes is the king of moral victories at this point?
Except he doesn't take them. He's not like the football coach. He readily admits the scoreboard's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird. Like everybody was. Well, hey, we, you know, at least we didn't get blown out, or we played them better than we thought we would, or this and that. He seems to get more of them than Butch gets, but he, you know, to his credit, he just sits up there. He doesn't sit up there and say, you know, well, we played a tough game, and you know, he at least he owns it and says it ain't good enough. So,
well, if you listen to the way his team talks too, his team talks like a team that wants to get better. You know, like Lamonte Turner said, I know we're going to learn from these losses. You want to come out and play the best teams in the country, and I think we have. I mean, how many other teams can boast that they've played the likes of Oregon thus far on the year, who I know they're off to kind of an uneven start, and some of these teams probably aren't what you thought they would be at the beginning of the year. That Gonzaga team, Mark Few kind of looks at them as they're one of his best teams he's had. He coached tonight's game. Like, you talked to Keith about what Tennessee wanted to get out of that game. Few coached that game tonight like, this is what I want to get out of it. I'm taking my team across the country. I'm toughening them up. I'm not going to baby them down the stretch. I'm not going to call timeouts and get in the way. I'm going to let them work through this. There were a couple times where he could have taken a timeout there. His team was kind of floundering, and he didn't do it. And you could tell he was being a veteran coach over there going, you know what? If we got to suffer an L tonight to get these guys' attention, we'll suffer an L tonight to get these guys' attention. That's the way.
He took a technical foul.
Exactly.
The technical foul was solely done to put game pressure on his own team.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think he was playing a game within the game tonight. And Tennessee responded with a great effort. Go ahead, Tweedy.
Now, what did they tee him up for? I mean, I was sitting there watching it. It didn't seem like he was saying anything like, you know, from what I could, I mean, I'm no lip reader, but it didn't seem like it was anything overly, like, demonstrative. You know, I think he was just telling the guy's fouling. Guy's fouling. I mean,
I think I read his lips. I think he said, give me a T.
Lamonte Turner on that last drive, what was he trying to do where it looked like he was, somebody said, or I thought I heard maybe Rucker kind of said on that was down there on the floor, said he was screaming, he's holding my arm, so. He looked like he went in there and realized he was up in there against, what, 3 7-footers and tried to put the ball back out to Evans and just, you know, that last little sequence there. Did you see anything? Or did you, Keith, were you at the game, I guess?
No, I'm back in Knoxville. But honestly, I look at that and I'm probably about as big a Lamonte Turner fan as there is among the fan base, but he's one of these guys that the first rule for him needs to be he needs to quit worrying about the officials, because he spends an inordinate amount of time complaining about what calls he doesn't get. And that's not going to serve you well, especially as a freshman, when you don't have any equity with the officials built up.
Right, right. Keith, what do you think about him defensively? It seems like to me he has trouble staying in front of people at times.
He's not terribly quick. That problem will be lessened a little bit when he doesn't have to guard primary ball handlers and point guards when Bone gets back, and you can move him over onto wings more often, who generally aren't as good at ball handlers and some of which naturally aren't as quick as point guards. I think he's kind of mismatched at point guard when he has to guard the other point guard, and that's why you see Tennessee get considerably better when Quay Parker comes in the game defensively, but offensively you suffer because Quay is not the world's greatest ball handler.
Yep.
So it's a situation. That's where I think not having Jordan Bone is such a tough spot for this team.
Tweety, go ahead, man.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Bob.
I think Clay gave him a nice little spark off the bench, I thought.
Yeah.
I did. I thought tonight was probably the best game he's played.
And got the start in the second half because of it. He was rewarded with a start.
Yeah. That's, to me, coaching 101.
No question.
You can't tell guys, I'm going to reward guys who practice hard and play hard.
No question.
Then a guy goes out and does it, and then you don't play him.
It's not about my rotation. It's about your rotation. You want to get in this rotation? Set the rotation for me.
Yeah.
That's what Parker did tonight.
Let me ask you this also, guys. Did they expect something different from Evans? Like, something
yes.
at all versus what they're getting?
Probably.
Like, did they expect him to go?
I thought they thought he would shoot it better.
Yeah.
I don't think they expected. They expected him to probably replicate about the numbers he put up at Utah State last year. 8-6 or something like that. I don't think they expected anything fantastic.
Musselman told a friend of mine he shot the ball better against them. He doesn't look like the same player. But
until he finally makes the one he didn't hold and reload three times tonight,
yeah.
He knocks the bottom out of.
That's my son's knock on him. He says he's constantly holding and reloading, and at some point you just got to let it go.
Well, he caught that one wide open out at the three-point line when we were in the middle of that run, and he reloads twice before he shoots it and misses it.
Yeah.
Then two possessions later, he catches one and goes straight up with it and drills it.
It's like me over a five-foot putt.
When you see one of those guys kind of stop and gather themselves, that's when it's almost always better when they just catch and go. You know, like they're in rhythm instead of stopping, gathering, checking their feet. You know, when they don't have the time to think about it, I think they shoot it. It always seems to me like anytime you see a guy double clutch or come back down, they're way better.
Well, that's why I was amazed Malik Monk made the shot at the end of the game last night for Kentucky.
He had 40.
Generally, if you jab step and fake somebody from three and then load back up and throw it up there, that's not going in.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, guys, sad news. Zsa Zsa Gabor has passed away at the age of 99.
She was in Fact of Life, wasn't she? She was the redheaded one.
No, that was Charlotte Ray.
Thank you, sweetie. I think Tweety's making a joke. On a night a lady passes away, I mean, geez, what kind of crowd is this? Ridiculous. Zsa Zsa Gabor. Now, who was Zsa Zsa Gabor?
How many of her husbands did she outlive?
That's not Coochie Coochie Coo, is it?
No, that's Charo.
Zsa Zsa Gabor, the one that played on Green Acres?
Yes. And had a twin sister named Ava. Who I think is already going on to the great beyond.
Farm living. It's a life for me and the great Mark Griffin, who now joins us, the pride of unions.
Arnold Ziffel.
Mr. Haney.
Mr. Haney. One of the world's great salesmen. Sam Drucker.
Wow. Classic TV there. Hey, Griff, you were at the game tonight. Your thoughts on the effort as we bring in former Vol great Mark Griffin, a mainstay on this program. Your Smart Way Garza Law Firm. Tennessee basketball overtime. Griff, your thoughts.
Well, Tony, obviously I've not been able to hear your callers call in, but it seems like the same old theme, close but no cigar, but a great effort in the second half. Like the Carolina game last week in Chapel Hill, it felt similar to Tennessee this week that hold on a second. Somebody's calling. So it felt similar this week that I thought that Tennessee had a chance to get back. If they could ever cut it to, 10 or less, I thought we had a good chance. But one of the keys, Tony, that I looked at that I thought was a big possession. I know there's tons of possessions in the game, and you can't blame it on one possession. But that halftime turnover by Lou Evans, I thought, really cost us some momentum. It turned, I think the game ended up being 13 or 14. When we could have cut it to under 10 with a three-pointer, and I just thought that was a crucial way to close out the half. That was unfortunate for Tennessee.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. Let me ask you this. On the play at the end where the ball slips out of Quay Parker's hands, and we had gotten, apparently Wes Rucker had tweeted out, I didn't see this on Twitter. Like, I miss a lot of things, God knows. It was enough for me to get here today for the start of this. But apparently he was talking to the refs about how they were grabbing his arm. Did you see that, Griff, from where you were, that his arm was impeded or he was fouled on the play?
Lamonte or Quay?
Quay Parker. Or was it Turner? Whoever turned it.
I think it was Turner.
Turner, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Griff. The ball that slipped away.
I just think it's that I hate to call it an ugly left-handed shot, but that's what it was. I mean, I don't know what he loves about that left-handed move with the little jump hook shot that just doesn't go in. But that's the second one that we've seen again, and I was hoping he would distribute the ball to other people. Even though I'm not knocking him for overall play, I just think at some crucial moments, Lamonte wants to take it upon himself and needs to get some of his players the ball, like AKA Robert Hubbs, or for this particular game, Mostella.
That is interesting. Keith, your thoughts on that, about how you want the ball in the hot hands there at the end rather than him taking it, or do you like that trait, Hatfield?
Well, I mean, I think that's Lamonte's game to a great extent, but that's the adjustment, and Mark knows it as well as anybody, that's the adjustment from being the guy in high school to being a part of a major college team. I mean, in high school, I'm sure on Lamonte's team, he had no reason to throw the ball to anybody else. It's kind of the Allen Iverson in Philadelphia effect, that a bad shot by Lamonte probably had a better chance of going in than a good shot from the guys he was playing with then. But now you're playing with guys that are at the same level you are, and you've got to figure out who's having a good night and who's got a better shot.
Griff, any other thoughts on tonight's game before we go back to our phones? Mark Griffin now joins Hatfield, myself, and Keith. Do you have to go? Because you told me you had about 45, and if you have to go, let me know.
I can do one more call, Tony.
All right. Any other thoughts, Griff, and then we'll go back to our phones.
No, for the people that weren't there, I thought it was a really good turnout. I don't know how it looked on TV.
Yeah, it did.
But I thought it was a great turnout for the Mid-State faithful, yep, the people that came to support the Vols. I was really pleased with the effort overall, once again, the second half. I was amazed how big this Gonzaga team was. Tony, I looked them up. They had five players that are 6'10 or taller.
Yep.
Multiple five-star players or high school All-Americans. So this was a really, really sound team that Tennessee played today, and I thought, you know, gave a great effort.
Shout out to the great Dale Jones, among the many that are watching us tonight on Facebook Live. Coach, really proud of your guys winning in the Camellia Bowl yesterday. I enjoyed a lot of college football over the weekend, including the playoffs in at the FCS level. Two incredible football games. I've really gotten into FCS level football this year and have enjoyed every minute of it. Let's get ready to jump back to our phones and let's get our next call in. I got Keith Hatfield, I got Mark Griffin, and I got our next caller that's up with us tonight. Hello and welcome into our caller.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, welcome in.
This is Don.
Hey, Don, welcome in.
Thanks, man. Before we get into the game, you have you guys have one thing backwards. On Green Acres, that was Ava, not Zsa Zsa.
Ava, okay. So Ava Gabor was Green Acres. So what's Zsa Zsa famous for besides having like 50 husbands?
Well, she was you'd call her a major, but a mid-level movie star, you know,
okay,
way back in the 50s.
Okay. So okay.
Thing. Both of them Hungarian, got that accent.
Oh, beautiful. When it came to husbandry, she had enough to form two teams.
Correct. I believe me. I'm about to say something wrong. Yeah, she had a bunch. I know her and Liz Taylor ran a close race for a while, but I think Zsa Zsa pulled away.
What do you think it'd been like when those people were in their mid-20s if social media would have been around, Griff? Some of the exploits of those women. I think there are some sex tapes out there of those two.
I tell you what, if social media had been around back then, nobody would have ever heard of the Kardashians.
No question. People think this stuff's new.
Girls.
Ain't nothing new under the sun. But go ahead, Don. You didn't call about that tonight, but thank you for the correction. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was sitting here watching the game and, of course, got real depressed during the first 10 minutes of the game and everything. But once again, this bunch, I mean, it's hard to say you enjoy watching losing basketball. I've not been disappointed in any game outside of Chattanooga this year. I mean, how can you be? They give you effort. They never go away. They fight to the finish. You know, tonight, you know, I know the stats said they were 24-33, but it just seemed like, you know, we cut it to four there late in the game and then missed the free throw that would have cut it to three. Keith mentioned then we came down and missed a three. Could have been a tied three. I enjoyed seeing how frustrated that they could make Mark Few.
He was. You know, Griff, the Zags, I don't know what they wanted to get out of tonight's game or out of this series, but we were talking about it with Keith Hatfield before. They got a lot out of tonight, Griff, because Tennessee really pushed them.
Yeah, it's like tournament-style play in December. You know, you get to play in a great venue, such as Bridgestone, away from your home crowd, even though I will say the Zags do travel well. They had a nice little group of people that was sitting behind the bench and got pretty loud during the game. But I think Coach Few wants to get them away from their backyard to see how they fare on a trip. And it's a bonding trip as well to travel as far as they did. So, you know, give Few credit for bringing him to Nashville.
Well, you know, one thing I've just perusing scores and seeing some of the game, I watched the end of the ETSU-Mississippi State game, and I watched some of the Vandy game against Chattanooga last night. I don't know outside of Kentucky, maybe A&M in South Carolina somewhere, quite on that level. I don't know in Arkansas. Those four teams, you take them out, and I don't – if Tennessee plays those teams the way they played the North Carolinas and the Gonzagas and the Oregons and Wisconsins, this team could win more than a few conference games.
Oh, I don't think
they're young. Maybe they'll come out and play like we did the first half the other night.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But the league's terrible. Not having Fulkerson's not going to help.
No.
You know, he was developing into such a nice player. Let me ask Keith Hatfield about that, who's got to depart the premises. Keith, what are you expecting? Once the conference begins and we flip the script, what do you expect, man?
I think this team's going to be really, really good at home. I mean, I think young teams, and I think we're seeing this team's a little more, considerably more talented than a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
Young teams are usually pretty good at home. They're talented enough. I mean, they were decent at home last year.
Yeah, we're beating Kentucky in here.
They just got to find some road wins.
We're beating Kentucky in here.
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, we beat them here last year, and I think this team is better than last year's team. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the thing is we won, one road game last year? Mm-hmm. I think we won at Mississippi State, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You find three or four road wins this year? Mm-hmm. You can definitely challenge going 500 or a little above in the
NIT. Absolutely. Squeeze into the NIT. Why not?
I mean, this league is nothing. Don mentioned those four teams. I think Georgia and Florida are decent. But once you get past those top six, I think you can throw 7 through 13 into a hat on any night. And whoever shoots the ball and doesn't turn the ball over is going to win the game. I think Missouri is a special level of awful. And since we get them at home this year, we would essentially have to not be able to walk from the dorm to the arena to lose to them. But everybody from 7 to 13 in the SEC, I think you can put them in a hat and draw out the winner and pick the winner just as often as you would actually looking at the game.
Great comments, Keith. Thank you, man. Great. Hey, have fun tonight.
I will do so, Tony. Griff, Don, everybody have a good night.
All right, buddy. Love you. Griff, get back on here in here with Don. Don, your thoughts on what Keith said, and then I'm going to bounce that over to the great Mark Griffin.
Well, I agree with, you know, his assessment, and, you know, and not to get away from our guys, but when you look at, you know, Mississippi State, Auburn in particular, with the big-name coaches, big-name recruits, I think we've done more with what most people thought was not a stellar incoming class than the more notarized coaches have done with the more notarized classes. What do y'all think?
What do you think, Griff? What's your early impression here?
I agree with the caller. I think that this team plays up to its competition.
Yep.
I think they've got great experience going into SEC play.
Yep.
And Tony, I'll go on a limb and say they finished 10-8 in the conference.
Wow.
Get into the NIT.
Yeah, wow.
I really do. I think they can do that. And like Hatfield said, if they can get a couple of wins on the road, and not that you're going to win every home game. I just don't know if that's possible or not.
Right.
But I think that if you can win most of your games at home and get a couple steals on the road, then there's a great chance they could finish 10-8. And who knows going into the SEC tournament. And guess where the SEC tournament's being played, Tony?
Right there. Bridgestone,
where they play tonight.
Yeah.
So that's there's some magic behind that game that, you know, they're going to be able to have that familiarity coming back into Nashville in March. and they'll think about this Gonzaga game. So it's only gonna benefit this young team.
Don, thank you. Great talking to you, man.
All right.
See, I told you tonight, even Don wouldn't rip the officiating, and I was right on the money. Trust your first instinct, T-Bay. On a night where Zsa Zsa Gabor passes away at the age of 99, the basketball team loses 86-76 to the Zags of Zagland. And, Mark Few, I think it's a good thing for your program.